Hello there, this is Bane. When I'm not out on the streets of Gotham hunting the Batman, I find myself listening to Part-Time Fanboy on a regular basis. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at www.parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on the Twitter. Do it now, or I'll have to do something awful to your spine.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Well, should we begin? Should we begin our conversation?
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, why don't we just start by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have a very special guest, an international guest. You are in Norway right now, correct, sir?
Yes, I am in Oslo, Norway.
Oslo, Norway. That's right. And my guest's name is, I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly. It's Joseph Johannes? Did I get that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Ah, that's awesome. Great. I didn't know if it was going to be Joseph or Joseph. Is which is the correct pronunciation where you're from?
It's Joseph.
Joseph. Okay, great. I wasn't sure. Yeah, so you are halfway around the world right now. I mean, this is amazing, the technology. We finally were able to connect, but we are here. And the reason that I have you on is because you have a comic book series called The Urban Legend, which is coming out soon on Comixology, right?
Yeah, Amazon Kindle, actually.
Oh, yeah. Amazon Kindle. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I guess they're changing their whole sort of setup,
right?
Yeah, they
are. So it's a little bit back and forth there. So
yeah,
Amazon Kindle, to be honest.
Yeah, Amazon Kindle. Okay, so yeah, I mean, I didn't really use Comixology all that much before Amazon switched over to this new sort of system that people are kind of complaining a little bit about, but whatever. I mean, there it is, The Urban Legend on Amazon Kindle. There's a lot to talk about because, I mean, one of the things, I did get the preview of the book and I read it and I very much enjoyed it. I think this is like a really fun action sort of oriented, a little bit retro, right? Like maybe 70s in there.
Yeah,
80s. Yeah, 70s, 80s. I mean, he's dressed sort of in like a Bruce Lee Game of Death.
Like it's a tribute to Bruce Lee.
Yeah, Bruce Lee. So it's he's like a sort of like a street level hero, like vigilante, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, yeah. And what struck me so much is because, I mean, you're in Norway and, you know, I'm reading this book. And it very much, while I'm reading it, I was thinking, and maybe this is because I am the ignorant American in the room, I was very much struck by how American it felt to me. Like, I was like, oh, this reminds me very much of, you know, stuff that has come from my country, which, you know, like the 70s action movies or Batman crime-fighting comics, like things like that. So can you speak to that a little bit? Like, I mean, it's obviously like an international feel, but it feels very American to me.
Oh yeah, definitely. It has a very American feel to it, especially in the first four issues. I guess you read the first four issues and then in issue five and six, he goes to China and Japan and you see a more global scenery.
Actually. Oh
yeah. I actually personally went to China and wrote that China issue where he's in China.
Yeah.
And then I went personally to Japan to write the issue where he's in Japan just to capture the essence of just being there and capture the environment and the whole scene, actually.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So, I mean, are you a native of Norway? Are you from, like, do you just live in Norway? Is that where you were born? Or is that like...
I was born in Denmark. My roots are Eritrean.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So East Africa.
Gotcha.
So we moved to Norway when I was 9 years old, the whole family.
Gotcha. So, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, because I mean, to me, it seems very interesting. I was doing a little research on the internet, and it's funny because whenever I was kind of talking about this book, like mentioning it to like my wife, I would say African American. And I'm like, but no, he's not American. I mean, the creator is not American. You're, you know, born in Denmark and you live in Norway now. And yeah, your roots are in actual Africa. And so it's like, it's so dumb of me to just go to that thing, but it's like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like the terminology that we're using.
It's not that. It's a little bit confusing. but a lot of people think I'm African American actually because I, you know, have the American accent. I've been a lot to the U.S.
And, sure.
You know, got a lot of impulses, inspiration from the U.S. basically.
Sure. Yeah, I was doing some research just on like Norway. And I was just trying to figure out the sort of like how many, like what the population of Black people was in Norway. But when I looked it up, it was interesting to me because I couldn't really find any statistics because people were saying like, oh no, we don't even approach race or color or anything like that, that way in Norway. Like we don't measure by that. And I was just being an American and going through everything that our country has gone through, and particularly in recent history, right? Like with Black Lives Matter and stuff like that. I was just kind of blown away by that concept. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Oh yeah, definitely. We don't differentiate like in that sense, like in the US, basically you were born or been here for many years, you practically look upon as a Norwegian actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not to say there's no discrimination and racism, because there is, but is really, people are really tolerant, open-minded, and very like welcome to our place, and they would open arms basically. So it's a very good environment basically here.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny because when I was doing the research, people were saying like, is this a paradise for like Black people? Like nobody, you know, and I was just like, wow, it sounds interesting to me. And again, you know, I will be happy to say it, the ignorant American, just seeing how that would function in a different society. And it's funny because, I mean, you just said there is discrimination. I mean, obviously it exists, but sure. I was curious as to how your upbringing in Norway kind of like led you to create a book like The Urban Legend, which to me seems like it's very based in, again, the things that surround the American Black experience. Am I making any sense?
Definitely. I've been very influenced by America's history, especially with the, you know, civil rights movement, with figures like Malcolm X and other huge personalities like that. And I've been a lot to the U.S. as well. I've been all over the place, Chicago, Miami, L.A. I think I've been there like 40 times or something.
Oh, wow.
I've been there a lot. Very, very. And I really like to be in the U.S.
Yeah.
I really, really like being over there. And it's kind of like ground zero for comics, superhero and pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought, you know, if you really want to start doing something, like creating a new superhero that's supposed to compete with all these powerhouses like Marvel and DC Comics, I think it's a good thing to have that American touch of it, because that's what people can relate to. And then from there, you can kind of expand and do other nuanced things and so on.
Yeah. Interesting because one of the things while I was looking over the book, I mean, this book is like originally 10 years old, right? Like you're republishing it, or it came out 10 years ago?
Well, I published first in, it's a weird story to be honest.
Oh, go. That's what we're here for, weird stories. Oh, yeah. We like weird stories. Right. Okay, go for it.
All right. So I went to different African countries in the summer of 2010.
Uh-huh.
And there I saw many Black kids not having any positive role models. They look so abandoned. Mm. And I thought I would really like to help these kids with something that's kind of different, something that they never known or are familiar with, but something that can really empower them.
Yeah.
And then when I got back to Norway, I kind of had this epiphany about why not create a Black superhero that can inspire them, empower them, and also show them the path to a better life.
Yeah.
That's how I came up with the superhero. Basically, no experience, no nothing, but I had a clear vision. I wanted to make him very human. I want him to really give a voice to the voiceless and stand up for the people who can stand up for themselves and kind of be different, like make him a teacher, which is very a relatable job, and also to really talk about issues that affect societies, both negative and positive. So I spent a whole year doing this. I ran out of money, so I sold my apartment. I moved into a really, you know, like a shack, like a really tiny, tiny studio apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I got rejected by everybody in Norway.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Everybody rejected it. Nobody wanted it. Nobody was interested. Everybody laughed at me, and I thought, you know.
They laughed at you?
Yeah, I thought I was doing like stand-up comedy. But like, I was ridiculed basically by, hey, I'm creating a Black superhero. And it was hard. It was really hard, really. But I knew I had something special. So I thought, you know what? Let me go to Comic-Con in the US, San Diego.
Yeah.
So I went there in the summer of 2012. And it was really, really successful over there. It was really embraced by a lot of big companies and minor companies.
Yeah.
And I signed to a minor company. And then a few months after I signed a deal with them, it got published as a strip in USA Today.
Oh, and wow.
That was really cool because that was kind of my big breakthrough. So I got my first breakthrough in the US before I had any recognition here in Norway, basically. And after that, everything opened up here in Norway.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, I mean, but what is the comic scene like in Norway? I mean, I've had people on from different countries. I mean, I just interviewed someone from Australia. I've spoken to people in the UK. I've spoken to people in China. So, I mean, I've definitely gotten an idea of different areas of the world. I mean, I've been to the UK. I've been to Austria. I've been to France. The French comic scene just blew my mind when I was there for a short time. I mean, I love French comics. But what is it like in Norway? What sort is it like? Asterix, like that sort of thing, or like what were you exposed to?
Not that much Asterix, but it's more like humor, Norwegian humor.
Okay,
like comic strips that you see in the newspapers, stuff like that. It's very, my opinion is that it's kind of very basic in a sense.
Sure.
But it's a very huge thing out here. Like Norwegian humor and kind of basic, basically. Yeah. And people are very local in that sense that they don't really, comic book creators in Norway, they don't expand or think globally like I've done with my superhero.
Sure.
It's very local. And that's what their main ambition.
So how did you come to be exposed to superhero comics in general?
Oh, mostly it was the movies, and they had Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and comics like that in the stores, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And were they translated into, like, Norwegian, or were they in English?
Yeah,
or?
And also English. Like, for instance, the biggest comic book here was Donald Duck.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, yeah,
that's
Disney,
like a
right?
national figure out here in Norway. Especially
really?
Back. Oh, yeah, back in the day before social media, every kid here in Norway, like 80% of them were reading Donald Duck.
Oh, was it Donald Duck or like Scrooge McDuck?
Donald Duck. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. So it's just, it's more like sort of like humor based. So if you were trying to publish something in Norway that was more maybe like gritty and like street level superhero, maybe people weren't that open to it.
Yeah. And also it's a Black superhero. So it's kind of different on top of that as well.
Gotcha.
Because it was very un-Norwegian in a sense. It was very... let's say American.
Yeah. That's funny.
So so they didn't really embrace it. They didn't really get the idea until it got some recognition in the US. And also before my trip to Comic-Con in San Diego, I was approached by NRK, which is the national TV channel here in Norway. And they had read in the newspapers that I was thinking of going to the US and try to get a deal over there. So they approached me and asked if they could do like a documentary of me where they were following me going around a Comic-Con, show my superhero to different organizations and companies, basically.
Oh,
and
that's cool. Can people see that? Is it like on YouTube or something?
Oh yeah, it's on YouTube. It's if you write the Urban Legend Comic-Con.
Yeah.
whole thing is there.
Oh, I'm gonna look that up. I wish I'd known about that. I would have watched it before before we did this interview. So let's talk about the urban legend. I mean, I read it. I really liked it. I really like the art. I love what you're trying to do, you know, with the book. I mean, it's very again, it reminded me a lot of stuff that I loved growing up. There's a, I don't know if you've ever heard of a book called Brother Man, which was in the 90s, very obscure, like indies comic. It reminded me a little bit of that. If you get a chance, you should look it up. It's great stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'll check it out.
And, but yeah, I mean, so you did this in 2012. Why don't you tell people what the Urban Legends is about? By the way, that's a great name for a comic book. So I will start off with that.
Oh yeah, thank you. I really liked it myself. And it was a really struggle to find, come up with a superhero name. Really. Sure. But when I first got it, it really stuck. It's like, perfect. That's my superhero.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool name.
Yeah.
Basically, Urban Legend is a everyday man who sees his city deteriorating to financial crisis, corrupted bureaucrats, police, and you know, all this, all these bad people are kind of destroying the city, and you see the criminals are getting stronger and stronger by each day. Mm-hmm. And you see that his brother is has moved in to live with him, and he promises his whole family to take good care of him. But he gets murdered by the nephew of the biggest crime lord in that city, which I call Capital City. Yeah. And he knows that this murder will go unsolved, just like any other murder. And he has that guilt that he feels he's responsible for that murder because he was supposed to protect him as a big brother. So he decides to really stand up against the evilness and then really start fighting back against the crime, against the bad guys. And he doesn't really know that his intention was never to become a superhero, but he saw that he has, as a human being, he has to step up when he sees people doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
And then the more he moves in the role as a superhero, the more it does something to him as a human being, because it exposes him to a world that he didn't know that could exist, full of corruption, destruction, and so on. So you see really Urban Legend take you on a journey, like a human journey, and you can relate to him. Because later in the other issues, you would see him homeless, doubting himself, losing his job. And this is something that people, the common man in the street, can relate to, really. So
yeah.
I want to go that direction.
Yeah. Well, talk to me about how your book is a little different than, you know, like say any other superhero, Batman and stuff like that, you know, because I mean, I'm very, I very much like the book. I see where some of your influences lie, but it seems like with the Urban Legend that, particularly probably 10 years ago, it was very unique, that you were trying to do something different with this book, correct?
I was really. I really wanted to create a human superhero because I really thought that all of the big superheroes has kind of lost their touch with what the core identity of what a superhero is supposed to be. Now it's too flashy, too much superpowers, too much all over the place. I really want to go back and really create that unique, standard, original superhero that was really back in the day, in a sense. And I also wanted to talk about topics that really affects people in their lives. So I've done special issues on bullying, on climate change, on Ebola for kids in Africa, teaching kids Africa how to protect themselves against Ebola. We just finished last week a first aid issue, which teaches kids about first aid.
Okay.
What to do if kids are out swimming and one of them is too long underwater. What do you do, and how teach them how to perform CPR and such and such. So we've done a lot of special issues for kids, which are used as school curriculum in, I think, in 6 different countries right now.
Sure.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of different in that sense. And it's a really super, it's a superhero that really focuses on empowering people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would, more than any other superhero.
Yeah.
I like to think
that. Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting to me because, you know, one of the things that I've always noticed, and you know, I've mentioned this on the podcast, that I'm half Latino, and you know, the lack of sort of like representation. Well, it's funny because you're Norway and I'm half Estonian, so like we're not
okay.
So, but we're thinking about taking a trip to Estonia this summer, but now with everything that's going on in the Ukraine, I'll shut up about that. But anyway, we'll see. But anyway, my point being that I've always been aware of sort of like the lack of representation of, you know, different races in comics. I mean, I'm still waiting for my Latinx Avenger. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, I'm like, where's my Latinx Avenger? You know, it hasn't happened yet. When is that coming? Uh-huh. So I totally understand like how unique this idea must have been like 10 years ago, but as things have changed, like, you know, in the past decade and stuff, you've seen things like representation expand a little bit. It's not perfect, sure. but you know, there's things on TV like Black Lightning. Yeah, a little better. Yeah, yeah, it's definitely getting better. But I mean, you know, you see things on TV like Black Lightning and characters like that. How do you feel like your comic or character sort of stacks up to like what's happening and can still find a unique place in the marketplace?
I think it's good. Really, the more Black superheroes that are out there, the better, I think.
Sure.
I think my superhero is really different from all the other superheroes anyway, so I don't really have no worries in that sense, because it's a superhero without any superpowers.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a superhero of this generation in a sense.
Sure.
Yeah. And also when I started creating the superhero doing Urban Legend and while doing research, I noticed that kids in the Western world always had the luxury of having superheroes like Batman, the Incredible Hulk, the Avengers, Superman, and so on. While Black kids mostly has always had two kind of role models. It's either athletes or music artists, basically. So I saw a vacuum there. I thought, you know what? Let me take that spot.
sure.
Yeah. So, so that's what I've tried to do with my superhero. And also, when I released the superhero back in 2012, it didn't get any wide release, basically. And also, I only had like 2 or 3 issues back then.
Sure.
And now we have more, like, I think we have like 40 issues now.
Really? So, there's 40 issues?
Yeah, we published 3 compilation books here in Norway. The 2 last compilation books has been nominated for Book of the Year for you.
Oh, wow.
We won several international awards, and we collaborated with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Malala Fund, 20th Century Fox, and Nobel Peace Center, and World Wildlife Fund, and a lot of other big people and companies.
Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, I only
that's
got
kind
the
of
first...
how it's different from all the other superheroes in that sense also.
Sure. I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. I mean, you've obviously talked a little bit about how you've gotten it into sort of educational programs and stuff like that, but the Urban Legend has been featured with other organizations, correct?
And yes.
Yeah. And a lot. You mentioned it. Can you talk about that again a little bit?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was approached by the Nelson Mandela Foundation in 2014.
Uh-huh.
They congratulated me with the success. And I named my superhero, his name is, as a civilian in the story, his name is Malcolm T. Madiba. So I named him after Malcolm X, my father's a guy, which is also my middle name, and Madiba, which is Nelson Mandela's African name.
Gotcha.
So they kind of congratulated me with the success, and they really thought it was really cool that there's finally this Black superhero out there, and that he's also named after after Nelson Mandela. So they asked me if I want to be a Nelson Mandela ambassador, which I said, yes, it would be a great honor. So they invited me down to South Africa, to Johannesburg, and we did a big, big project down there, and they thought that regular issues, the one that you read, could maybe be a little bit too violent for the young kid. So I did a special issue for kids that focuses on education, about self-empowerment, and about being happy with who you are, which we translate into different local African languages like Zulu and Xhosa, and which we then distributed for free to schools and orphanage homes around Johannesburg, and especially in the Soweto area, basically. And that was kind of the start with these special issues for kids, which are now the school curriculum. And after that, we did the Ebola issue, we did an anti-bully issue, did a climate issue, and we did a anti-police violence issue also, which is coming out in a few months. So that was kind of the start. I never thought to go that direction, and that's kind of it wasn't really on the agenda. It kind of popped out of nowhere in a sense. And that's what I'm most proud of, that it's used as part of school curriculum in Norway, in Brazil, South Africa, Kenya, Eritrea, and some schools in Canada, basically. Yeah.
That's so cool. I mean, obviously I read the PR piece and stuff like that, but running a comics podcast, it is called Part-Time Fanboy. I may not know everything that's out there, but sure. I mean, yeah. I had not heard of the Urban Legend until I got the email. And so, I mean, it's funny to me how sometimes, again, as the stupid American, where it's like, I may not be aware of like what is happening outside of in the markets outside of my own country. Like, how does your book get published? Is it like in stores or in shops or is it just online?
After it was a strip in USA Today, I got a lot of press coverage in Norway and abroad. And also this TV documentary was shown primetime on Norwegian TV. It was a very, very popular show. And then all these people that was very negative of both me and my superhero Urban Legend kind of saw the positive response I got. After that, people kind of approached me and then I signed a deal with the third largest publishing house in Norway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we did a compilation book and that was a huge, huge success.
Oh, that's so cool.
And then when
was that? What year was that around?
October 2014.
Oh, wow. And then
we did book two in 2017. And then we did the book three. Then I moved publishing house. Then I moved to the biggest publishing house in Norway called Kaplindan. And that came out in 2020, actually. So my major focus was kind of like, okay, let's just focus on Norway for now.
Yeah.
And let me just put as much content as possible before I go out in the US. Cause I was afraid to kind of have too few issues. If it really gained momentum, then the whole thing kind of die out if I didn't have enough issues.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let me rather keep creating content. So now we are ready to publish two books this year. We're publishing book four and we're getting started with book five and exciting times.
And these are print books, right? Like do they?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I noticed a couple of years ago when I was in England and France, they still have bookstores like all over the place. This is amazing.
Popular. It's not like the US. It's super popular. Like,
yeah,
I would say 80%, 90% still read books the old way.
Yeah.
Norway. So it's still a very, very popular medium.
Yeah.
To use that one.
Oh, that's so cool. And so do people in Norway, I mean, are they buying? Because I've been to Italy, and when I was in Italy a long time ago, like probably 20 years ago, one of the things that blew my mind was that they still had, you know, obviously there's a lot of trains in Europe and they had the train stations and at all the stands they had digest books of like comics like Dylan Dog and stuff like that. And I was like, they still have like comics in the streets, like on news, and people are buying them and reading them. And my wife had to stop me from literally like coming back with arms of Italian comic books that I could not read because I did not understand or read Italian. But I mean, is it like that in Norway?
Oh yeah, it is definitely. And then
I'm so jealous.
Getting more popular here in Norway for this because this generation is kind of like having a rebirth. Because it's not like the old days before social media, before iPads, Netflix, and so on. So people are more moving towards that, to reading comics. And it's very popular. Like my Urban Legend is a very popular book in the libraries. It's one of the most sought after books for kids and youth. So it's very cool. So I give lectures also all over the world. I have like workshops where I teach kids how to create their own superhero. We create our own superhero together. And then I put them two or three in groups where they have to create their superheroes within like half an hour. And then they have to stand in front of the class and tell them about the superhero they created. And it's just so fun.
It's so cool.
Educational. And I've done this in India, in New Delhi. I've done this in South Africa. I've done it in Brazil, Eritrea, Denmark, all over the world, basically.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah. I mean, your story is, I mean, it sounds like heaven for a lot of like creators in the US that I've, you know, interviewed because I mean, you know, I don't know how it worked for you, but I mean, sort of for some people, it's kind of a rough game, like publishing comics, but it seems like you've really found your outlet and a way to get your stuff out. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, I mean,
yeah, I knew very little of the market, basically, when the superhero market when I first started. I just want to create a superhero. And I never kind of saw it as a superhero, the urban legend. I saw it as something greater than that. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
Something that could really empower people in a whole different way and talk about social issues that really affects people of this day, of this, in this era, basically.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any mentor. I didn't have any, you know, consiglieri, to use that word.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just went and bought books of successful people and I just studied them. Oh. I studied books of Malcolm X, Charlie Chaplin, Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra, Michael Jackson, all these big, big pop culture icons, and also read the stories of the Superman creators, Batman, and Stan Lee, of course, and saw, you know, protect your IP, protect your superhero, trademark it, and be smart about it. Don't do like what Superman creators and the other superhero creators have done, basically.
Yeah.
That really, think of it as a business also, but have fun with it and see how far you can take it. So I went personally alone to Japan. I went to India by myself, went to Brazil. And I really, I just was very, maybe naive. I think naive kind of helped me because I just saw solutions. I didn't see any obstacles in a sense. And if there was any obstacles, I would just jump over it or just, you know, go to the side and not fall in that ditch, basically. So, but it's been a long journey, basically.
Sounds like it. I mean, so would you just go to these countries and just be like pitching your idea? I mean, because obviously you have an idea. Now, were you a writer before you came up with the idea for the comic book? Or did you have to study like comic book writing? And obviously you had to find your artist, which I can't remember the name, at least for these first.
Oh, his name is New Tasty.
Yeah, New Tasty. That's what it is. Yeah,
he's based in Birmingham, UK, in England.
Oh, wow.
And he's just been so great. Amazing, really. He took a chance on a nobody that had no experience, no track record whatsoever, but he really liked my energy and my advice and my, you know, approach to it, and said, yeah, I can do it. And I was so happy because he's a very, very sought after and established artist. He's done work for Capcom, Sega, BBC, Disney, all these major companies, but he really stuck with me. And even when I didn't have that much money in the beginning, he said, that's no problem. We'll figure it out. And he's just been the best, really. So a big shout out to him.
Oh, basically. Wow. That's so amazing.
So what I would do, I would go to these Comic-Con, I would do research. So when I went to Japan, for example, I translated an urban legend issue into Japanese. Uh-huh. I found a Japanese translator and I had the lettering, everything done in Japanese. And then I had like a cover letter also written in Japanese, which I stitched into the comic book. And about what urban legend is, contact info, social media addresses, and so on and so on. And then I was just handing out like free candy at these Comic-Con conventions.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just doing that in the US and Barcelona and Brazil and all over the place. Yeah.
So you were handing them out for free?
Yeah, I was.
So you weren't like selling them at cons, you were just giving them out?
Because I need to have like a agreement to sell, and there's a long waiting list and so on. And I just was giving out maybe like 300 to 500 comic books. Yeah.
Oh, wow. How did you, I mean, if you're not pulling in any income from this book, or at least initially to get it out there, like, was your goal to, I mean, make money? I mean, sort of like make this your living, or was it just to have it out there?
It was just having out there and help people. And I was just, I used my savings basically. And even was broke one time, homeless.
Oh,
and
man.
I had like $18 to live for like 2 weeks and want to give up. And it was hard. I've been going through all kinds of emotion on this journey, really.
Yeah.
Now in 8 years, it's been really blossoming financially and everything. So, and now there's a lot of cool, exciting stuff happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it sounds like, so I mean, with this Amazon sort of Kindle push, is this sort of you're trying to break into the North American or US market? Is that?
Yeah, that's the official launch. I wanted to do this for so many years, but then COVID came and I thought it's a bad timing. And then, and I thought, I'm more mature now. I'm more ready. I have more content. I have a stronger track record right now. Uh-huh. And I think this might be a good time. Also, I think it's better to come out with the Urban Legend now than, for example, like 5-6 years ago, I think.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. Wow. No, I mean, that's it's interesting. So are you going to be, how is the release going to work? Are you doing like one book a month, like on Amazon? Or are you dropping your whole library? Like what is the release?
I was thinking seasonal books. One season is like 8 issues.
Okay.
And then these special issues, I would like to have it out and, you know, try to get Urban Legend as part of school curriculum in the US, wherever they might accept it.
Sure.
So yeah, try to do stuff like that. Yeah. And really kind of let the US market and the US comic book industry know that there's a new superhero in town.
Oh, wow. No, I mean, yeah. And so when the first like season sort of drops, how long will readers have to wait till like the next season? Because if you're doing like sort of 8 issues a season, what is that? Sure. Like five, there's my math, you know, is that like 5 seasons that you're going to release or you?
It's like one season. That's also the one thing that kind of difference that it's different from all the other superheroes is that we've done the TV format in a sense. That's why we call it season one, basically. I don't know if others.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's something that a lot of people are doing lately. They're calling them seasons and not.
Oh yeah. 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 We did it back in the many years ago, but anyways.
Oh, so you were the first. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. Pioneer. But we're following kind of like a TV format structure.
Mm-hmm.
So every year we'll be dropping a new season basically. And then we would be releasing, special issues every now and then, basically.
Oh,
so we have cool. Like I think 9 special issues.
Yeah. Oh, really? And those are more the topical ones, like
yeah, you know? That's the most topical one. That's the storyline is around a certain topic, basically. Yeah.
Okay, but the 40 like core issues, that's like sort of the regular narrative that I read, yeah, where it's like a superhero.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you read the four, the regular season. You read the first 4.
Yeah. I read the first 4. We had like 40. It was good. I know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, one of the things I loved, I mean, there's a lot of like, I would love to hear about your influences because obviously his costume is very inspired by sort of like the Bruce Lee Game of Death.
Yeah.
There's like an Andre the Giant sort of like looking character there.
Yeah.
And you've got like a character called, what is it? Cornrow?
Yeah, Cornrow.
And
yeah.
He sort of like looks like, reminds me a little bit of like maybe Blade or something like that.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that. I'm fascinated with maybe the Andre the Giant thing because it's like someone in Norway is designing and writing. Like, how did that come up? And he's called like Manchild, right?
Yeah, he's Manchild. He's super strong, but he's a child up in his head, basically.
Yeah,
I like to have fun with the characters. Basically, the whole it's a tribute to all my inspiration, to all my heroes, and it also has a lot of history. Like the journalist, her name is Sarah Parks. So I named her after my niece, Sarah, and Rosa Parks.
Gotcha. Oh.
Yeah. And then you have him as a teacher at Tubman High School, named after Harriet Tubman.
Yeah.
And then in issue 7, you see him at the Emmett Till Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. So I put a little bit, you know, a little bit, okay, that sounds familiar. Not very obvious, but more like subliminal in a sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, those are civil rights icons and, legends in the U.S., which is kind of a little bit of what I'm fascinated about. Because, I mean, are we saying, I mean, obviously Malcolm X, I mean, I read the autobiography of Malcolm X in college or when I was in college. I never finished college. Kids stay in school. But my thing was, I mean, that book blew my mind. I mean, it changed my life.
Favorite.
Like, I love the Spike Lee movie. Like, I was blown away by it. And what I was most taken by from the autobiography of Malcolm X, beyond the civil rights sort of struggle and all that, was very much how a person can start one way and start as almost like nothing and become something else and transform by the end of his life into something that's more tolerant and accepting of the world as a whole. You know what I'm saying?
And, yeah, definitely.
And it's just, I'm wondering, like when you name somebody after like Rosa Parks or like Emmett Till, Does that translate internationally? Do people, like, obviously Nelson Mandela is an international figure, right? But I'm just wondering how that works for somebody in Brazil or Norway or, you know, wherever your books are selling. Do they recognize those icons or those influences?
Some of them do. And in the books, I have notes after each issue.
Okay.
I write, okay, Emmett Till, he was murdered in 1955 for whistling at a white lady.
Yeah.
And that kind of sparked the civil rights movement, which happened on the 1st of December when Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat. So I put notes like that in the background, like, wow, we didn't know that. And so I put it a little bit subliminal in a sense.
Yeah
I really do. And the Bruce Lee suit is that I've been a fan of Bruce Lee, like most of the most men.
Who is it? I'm still pissed off at that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood scene that Quentin Tarantino did, where he made him seem like an egotistical.
Where Brad Pitt is beating
up. I was like, no. I was one of those people that had a reaction.
Yeah. But I have a funny story about this suit, basically, because when I was when I was 8 years old in Denmark, I saw the Bruce Lee movie. I was not supposed to watch it because
I was just gonna say which one was it?
But, yeah, the Game of Death. I saw him in the yellow suit.
Oh, you saw Game of Death? Okay, as an 8 year old,
and I saw him in that suit, and I was just kind of fell in love with it because he looked so tough in it, and he was beating everybody in it, and it just looked so good. And then I was like, Mom, we need to get this. We need to get the suit. So we went to all the stores all around Denmark, basically. This is way before eBay, Amazon,
so you were Itzy, nothing on Itzy. Like, you were looking for that yellow tracksuit.
Yeah, and nobody had it.
Of course not.
Yeah, nobody had it. I was so sad. So when I came to the stage where I had to find a superhero suit to my superhero urban legend, I thought, that story popped up in my head. I thought, you know what? Yeah, this is good. I'm going to put that suit on him and make sure it kind of lives on also.
That's really cool. I mean, obviously, what is it? Kill Bill, like Uma Thurman wears a version of it too.
A lot of people used it later on, though.
Yeah, of course. No, but I mean, it's a great, when I, you know, opened up the PDF to check it out, and obviously in the PR stuff, I'm like, that's the Game of Death suit. Like, I was just like, that's cool. Like, so I'm just wondering, you know, again, ignorant American, like in Denmark, was Bruce Lee like a big deal, or was it just something that you stumbled across?
Nah, he was a big deal. Him, Jackie Chan.
Oh, really? Jackie Chan. Oh, cool.
Oh yeah. We grew up on all these Chinese Kung Fu movies from the 70s and 80s.
That's so funny.
And then later on, we moved on with Steven Seagal, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, yeah. Well,
or kickboxer and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's huge out here. Huge.
That's so interesting because I didn't discover Jackie Chan until I was older. I didn't even know he existed, really. And I think they released like Rumble in the Bronx in the US. And I went to a theater and I was like, who is this guy? Like, I was like,
oh, really?
He was a And I had a friend at the time who was from Hong Kong, and he was like, oh, I'm just going to, and then he taught me about like all the directors and The Killer and all those like Hong Kong action movies and stuff like that. And I was just like, it opened up a whole new world. Like, I was just blown away that I didn't know existed. And I don't think that a lot of Americans back in the day were exposed to as readily as we are today.
Yeah. It's a different, a different world now. It's much more globalized, much more connected, and so on. But we had like Kung Fu movies was super popular here in Norway, also I think in Europe, Northern Europe especially.
Yeah,
I can only speak about Northern Europe because that's where I kind of grew up. So
sure,
and you could rent it at the Blockbuster and all of that. Yeah, we used to watch it, the whole family. It was just so great.
That's great. Yeah. It's definitely an iconic thing. And it's one thing that I was like, that's cool. So, I mean, you've done 40 issues of this book and they exist. Like, are you just keeping going? How does your sort of like work schedule go as far as like the release of them? Because I would say, like, if I was averaging it out 10 years, were you doing like 4 issues a year, or were you just doing them how they come along? I mean, obviously production and money and stuff like that is an issue. So you're just doing them as you were able to?
Yeah, especially in the beginning, but now we're pumping out like 8-9 issues a year.
Oh wow.
So, yeah, the train is moving here. It's not stopping for nobody.
That's great. That's
so we're
great.
Popping out a lot of issues.
Oh,
and it's fun. And the stories are better, the art is better. And it's, yeah, you get better at it also, because when you dump 40 issues, basically.
I would imagine.
You get a hang of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so is this your like full-time job now? Is this your full-time employment?
Definitely.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's so cool. No, I mean, it's funny because, like I said, the comics market, particularly like the indie market in the U.S., generally speaking, you know, it's like a tough gig to get into, and especially to be like a full-time creator. And on top of that, be a full-time creator who owns his own property. It's yours. It's not anybody else's, right?
No investors, no nothing. And advice to all the combo creators out there. It all depends on what you really want to do, what your ambitions are and so on, but please protect your work.
Yeah.
Please protect your work, trademark it, copyright it, get a really good lawyer that specializes in trademarking comic books or copywriting, and then protect your work.
Yeah. Well, I just want to go back for a second. How did you discover Andre the Giant? That's what I want to know.
Oh, Andre the Giant. Well, actually, I'm a big fan of Andre the Giant, but he's not based on Andre the Giant. It might look like it.
He looks like it. What? He's not? What is he?
No,
he
he's looks, not.
I thought it was Andre the Giant for sure.
I saw in a movie. What's his name? I can't remember. I think he's in a Van Damme movie called Wrong Bet or something.
I probably have not seen that movie.
Okay. It's from 1990, actually, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make him kind of like a huge, huge figure, a character, basically. Yeah.
Just
really, really, really powerful.
Wow. So, I could have sworn that was like Andre the Giant when I was reading it.
So. Yeah. It kind of looks like him, actually, but it was not.
It doesn't kind of look like him. I was like, that's Andre the Giant right there. That's funny that's not him at all. Not based on him
no,
at all.
No, it's not him, but I see. Yeah. When I never thought about Andre the Giant, actually, when you mentioning it to me right now, yeah, kind of looks.
I was like, was he exposed to American wrestling in Norway?
Oh yeah, it was super, super popular. Oh wow,
was it really?
Yeah. Like Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, and Andre the Giant, and is it Jake the Snake or something?
Yeah.
All these people. Yeah. We were exposed to American culture from we were born, with Disney, with Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and Snow White.
Wow.
And then it goes,
we've just invaded everywhere with everything. Yeah. It sounds
everything.
Like.
Everybody's watching. That's why everybody speaks English out here as well, because everything you see on TV here is American sitcoms or TV shows, drama,
that's
action movies.
Funny. Because I mean, right now, like Netflix especially is being just inundated with like foreign shows, and some of them are like Nordic. I don't know if they're Norway or Finland or but a lot of like, and it's just so fascinating to me how much the world has opened up, in particular the storytelling world. But I'm also kind of blown away by how informed your book is by the American Civil Rights Movement, American pop culture and stuff like that. And do people in Norway have any problem like relating to it because it's so, or is it just that our entertainment industry has so infested your shores that people are like cool with it and they recognize it right away as for what it is?
Oh yeah. It's so infested, like with music, clothing, like pop culture, just everything, fashion.
Yeah.
Entertainment. It's just everything is American out here, really. And everybody dreams about going to the U.S. and, you know, watch all these iconic statues and buildings that they see on TV, go to New York, go to L.A., watch the Hollywood sign and so on and so on. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, it's interesting to me because you seem very invested in the comic book side of things, right? Because I get a lot of people on this podcast and they're like, I made this comic because I wanted to make a movie, or I made this comic because I wanted it to be a TV show. And now I want to sell the idea to, you know, a network or a movie studio or things like that. What are your thoughts for the future of the urban legend? I mean, it seems like you've been working on it for 10 years and going strong and sticking to the comic book. I mean, have there been has there been interest from whether it's American or foreign studios? Like, are you thinking in that way?
Yeah, I've had interest from both huge studios, both in the US and in Norway. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
But I declined because it was in the beginning. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to get a good deal anyway. So I might as just, well, hang on to it and just build it up and make it stronger and stronger. So there's been a lot of interest. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Wow. No, I mean, that's really, that shows a lot of like, I don't know what the appropriate word is, but for you to say like, hey, I just got started and I'm not really interested in you sort of like taking my idea from me and making it into something else until I'm ready for that. That's takes a lot of like, you know, character, I think.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. Just, you gotta think a lot. You gotta think really far ahead. Really. I even had like millionaires wanted to put in a lot of $1 million and become co-owners, but I thought, you know what? That will ruin the whole, project, the whole integrity of Urban Legend, having a lot of people. It's not, I didn't create Urban Legend to put it on the stock market, you know?
Yeah.
It's more to empower people and create a good role model and so on. So that's what I really had focus on. And all this money and all these movie stuff, especially back in the beginning, it was just distractions.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I could use the money. It was just, don't take it now.
A lot of people are thinking, this Joseph guy's crazy. Like, just take the money and run.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But so funny. I kind of studied the market and I know what I want. So when you know what you want, it's much easier to just fall on that path. And it really requires discipline.
Yeah.
But trust me, it's worth it in the end. But now I feel I'm ready to branch out and go into maybe, you know, video game, TV show, movie.
Yeah, action figures, statues, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, definitely. That's
cool. So what is the date that these will show up in the U.S. on Amazon Kindle?
9 March.
Okay, 9th great.
March. That's
great,
when great. The whole first season is coming out. And it's really, really worth checking out. It's really different. Yeah. And the episodes get stronger and stronger and better and better. And I really want you to read the whole season. So if you don't mind, I would like to send it to you.
Yeah, issue that'd
5,
be great.
6, 7, and 8. And I really look forward to really kind of releasing it in the U.S. digital.
No, this is great. I mean, people should read it and definitely search it out and check it out.
Yeah.
Are you looking to get it in print in the U.S. too, or are you just sticking to Amazon?
No, we're thinking of getting it in print also. So we're working on that and talking. We're going to talk to some publishing houses in the U.S. and
that's
so on.
Cool.
So, and I even got props from Stan Lee also about.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, he really loved it.
Oh, that's great.
Like, wow, you created this. Like, yeah. Wow, this is so great. And I was supposed to leave. And then he grabbed my hand and said, hey, you're not going anywhere until you sign this comic book.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I signed it. And then I took the very, very first issue I had of Urban Legend. And then I had him sign his autograph on that Urban Legend issue.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, that's great. Well, good for you. Yeah. I mean, this is great. Yeah. Congratulations on all your success.
It gave me confidence and kind of the more I achieved, it gave me confidence to keep going no matter what the circumstances were.
Sure. Oh man. Well, that's great. I am like super happy for you. I'm super happy to have discovered this book and, you know, been introduced to it. You know, I very much have enjoyed what I've read so far. It is very cool. I mean, it's definitely timely and of the moment. And I think people in the US will eat this up. I mean, I think this is something that
could
probably blow up into, it's just so ironic to me that it's coming from Norway and
I'm so surprised by it. So, and I think it's funny cause it kind of give you an advantage and not a disadvantage cause they get so, wow, this is so
of course
different, but it's so American at the same time.
Well, that's so cool. That's so cool. So the Urban Legend on Amazon Kindle, March 9th, that's when it drops and it will be in English. Where can people find you? Like on Twitter, on Instagram, you have a website, I know.
Our Instagram is I am the Urban Legend.
Okay.
And my personal Instagram is Joseph Johannes.
Okay.
It's J-O-S-E-F and then Y-O-H-A-N-N-S. Sorry. Y-O-H-A-N-N-E-S in one word. And on Twitter, it's the same. Basically, gotcha. I am Urban Legend and Joseph Johannes.
Gotcha. And what about the website? I mean, the Urban Legend website, it was in Norway. It was not in English.
Oh, it is in English.
It is? Oh, the one I came across.
UrbanLegendComics.com.
Oh, okay. Sorry, repeat that.
You can see the whole catalog and all different stuff, interviews. You can see the YouTube documentary that we put on YouTube with the TV channel NRK. So yeah, the UrbanLegendComics.com.
Okay. I must have come across the wrong website because I was looking at, interesting. What I saw was not English and I had to copy it and put it into Google Translate.
Duplicated exactly the same website into English.
Cool. No, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, everyone should check out The Urban Legend when it drops March 9th on Amazon. This is a fun book from what I've read. Gosh, there's like 10 times the amount of issues that I've read. So there's a lot of good stuff coming down the pike. Joseph, any last thoughts on The Urban Legend? And do you want to say anything else or?
Yeah, check it out. I think it's something that you're really going to enjoy and also learn and also be something that you can really appreciate in a sense. And there's so much cool stuff going on now in 2022, which I can't wait to share with you guys. We're coming out with a YouTube channel actually soon, within 6 months, where I'm going to talk about all the experience I had with Urban Legend and so on. And a famous YouTuber called Atozi, who has 1.2 million subscribers, he's the one that's going to run the channel. So
I think it's going to have
good growth.
That's a big deal. So,
It is. So much cool stuff is happening. So exciting times.
Well,
thank you so much, Christian, for
of course. Being on your
show. I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad we're able to connect. I mean, this technology is amazing. We're halfway, half the world away. I'm in Los Angeles and you're in Norway. And it's crazy. But thank you so much for your time. I mean, the book is called The Urban Legend. I have been speaking with Joseph Johannes. This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. You can check us out on all that wonderful social media stuff, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening as always. We will be back soon with another episode and check out The Urban Legend. You will enjoy it, I guarantee. That's it. Have a great week. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.